to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and I got a couple of stories I want to share with you today. And as an introduction to this first one, there's an old adage that a lot of people use to talk about how little insignificant things can determine the course of big, significant things. And maybe you've heard the adage. It goes like this: sow a thought and you reap an action. Sow an act and you reap a habit. Sow a habit and you reap a character. Sow a character and you reap a destiny. A lot of people trace that thought back to some of the ideas of the American philosopher Ralph Waldo Emerson, especially an essay he wrote called Self-Reliance, if you want to look up what he says there. But we make an adage like that because we like the idea that a little thing like a thought might ultimately help determine the course of something much larger, like a person's destiny. And that idea of little things influencing bigger and bigger things plays out in a fun and kind of cautionary way in this first story, told for you by Mara Menzies. It starts out with a woman making stew. Little thing, right? Where will a little thing like that lead? Here's Mara with a story called Mzi Chomba.
This is a story that has traveled. And it's a story about a woman. And this woman was expecting her family over for dinner. Now, family is not just mom, dad, and the kids, no. She had her grandparents coming. She had her own parents coming. She had the cousins and the aunties and the uncles, and everybody was coming. So she had a huge pot. And into that pot, she poured in her water and she bubbled and boiled up all the vegetables that she had prepared earlier in the day. She threw in all of her seasoning and she had a huge piece of meat wrapped around a thick bone. You know, the kind with the marrow in the middle, the delicious, tasty marrow of the bone. And she plunged that in too. And she stirred and she stirred and she stirred and she stirred. And every now and again, she would taste it. And she did not leave the stew alone until she was satisfied that, that this stew was just right for her family. And so she reached in. She pulled out the bone. She scraped off all the soft, tender meat, let it sink into the stew. She took a nice spoonful of the marrow and let the rest slip into her dish. And so she had an empty bone, and she saw that the window was right there, wide open. Without giving it a second thought, bing, she threw the bone out of the window. Now, at that moment, there was a dog outside. And this dog had been tortured by this wonderful aroma for what seemed like hours. Oh, he was salivating outside like something has to happen. Please, please, I'm begging you. I need something to eat. And as if his prayers had been answered, the heavens opened and bing, a bone landed right in front of him. And he jumped on it and he began to chew and gnaw and enjoy all the juice of this bone. But as he was busy tucking into this feast, into this lovely meal, there was another dog that started to walk down the street, and the second dog saw the first dog with a bone. And we all know what that second dog wanted. It wanted the bone. And it began to crouch down low. It bared its teeth. Its claws were out. But the first dog was not willing to part with his precious bone. And the dogs began to circle each other, each one laying an eyeball on the other, not letting go. The first dog protecting his bone with his whole life. The second dog determined to steal it. And the second dog suddenly spotted an opportunity. He leapt in. He tried to grab the bone. And it wasn't long before the two dogs were fighting. They were scratching and biting and nipping and clawing at each other. It was terrible, ripping and gouging. Now, there was an old man who was watching, and his name was Mzee Chomba, Old Man Chomba. And he said, stop the dogs from fighting, because if you don't, the boys will fight. Mzee Chomba, Mzee Chomba, Mzee Chomba, Mzee Chomba, aliona kila kitu kutoka dirishani. Old Mzee Chomba saw everything from his window. But when he placed his request, nobody replied. And a little while later, walking down the street was this young boy. He was on his way home from school. He was feeling good. He was now going home to rest and tell his parents about everything that had happened. When suddenly, he saw the two dogs fighting. And he had always been told, stay away from fighting dogs, because of course he might get hurt, he might get caught in the war. And so he started to inch around them ever so slowly, when to his horror, he realized that one of those dogs was his dog. The most wonderful, kind, soft-natured dog in the world. And his fear, whoosh, disappeared. He raced forward. He grabbed hold of the second dog and tried to pull it off. Leave my dog alone, you vicious beast. And at that moment, another boy happened to be walking down the street. Oh, this boy was also on his way home, thinking of all the mischief he could get up to. Oh, when suddenly he saw a boy attacking a dog. And this boy thought, that is horrible. Animal cruelty. Terrible. Especially when he realized that that dog was his dog. Hey, leave my dog alone. And he raced forward. And it wasn't long before the two boys were fighting, punching and kicking and flinging each other to the ground. It was terrible to watch. Mzee Chomba, Mzee Chomba, Mzee Chomba, Mzee Chomba, aliona kila kitu kutoka dirishani. Stop the two boys from fighting, because if you don't, the women will fight. Did anybody listen to old Mzee Chomba? No, they did not. And a little while later, there was a young woman walking home from the marketplace. Her baskets were completely empty. She had sold everything. She had a big wad of cash hidden away. She was going home to relax before she had to make the family meal. And on the way, she saw the two boys fighting. Oh, young people today, all they do is hang around and fight each other. What is this world coming to? But then she realized that one of those boys was her son, the light of her life, the angel of her world, the most prized human being in creation. And she raced forward. She grabbed hold of the ear of the second boy. Is this what they teach you in school, huh? Is this the kind of family you come from? She was livid, outraged. But at that moment, who came down the street? Lady number two walking home. Her baskets were full. She had no money left. She'd had her hair done, got a nice new outfit. She was looking good. She was feeling even better. When suddenly she noticed a lady beating up a boy. Oh, that boy must have done something terrible to warrant such a beating. No, no. My boy, my son, oh, how wonderful and precious he is when he was born. And now this evil woman is beating him. How dare she? And she raced forward, sleeves were up. She took her jewelry off. Right, lady, are you ready? You ready for some action? You don't go around beating up little children. And it wasn't long before the two women were fighting. They were hitting and pulling and grabbing at each other, punching and kicking, flinging each other to the ground. Mzee Chomba, Mzee Chomba, Mzee Chomba, Mzee Chomba, aliona kila kitu kutoka dirishani. Stop those two women from fighting, because if you don't, the men will fight. Nobody listened to old Mzee Chomba. And soon two men came walking down the street. They came from different villages, but they were very good friends. And now as they were taking a stroll together, they looked up and in the distance, They saw a struggle, a kerfuffle. Oh, that must be children fighting. What on earth are they doing? And as they got closer, they realized those are very large children. Those are not children, those are women. Oh, how embarrassing. Can you imagine if our wives would engage in such a awful, terrible activity? And of course, as they got closer, they realized that those two women were their wives. Did you send your wife to hit my wife? Did you send your wife to beat up my wife? And it wasn't long before the two men were fighting. It was terrible, a brutal fight. Mzee Chomba, Mzee Chomba, Mzee Chomba, Mzee Chomba, aliona kila kitu kutoka dirishani. Stop the men from fighting, because if you don't, the villagers will fight. Nobody listened. And it wasn't long before one of the men's friends showed up. And he too, joined in. And then another one, yeah! And then another one came, and this time they picked up a stone and whoosh! And the one who came after that came with a stick. But the one who came after that came with a blade, and the fighting began to change. It wasn't just a punch-up anymore. Soon, it was getting serious. People were getting hurt. Soon, houses were being set on fire. Soon, the livestock was being chased out of the fields. Soon, the crops were being destroyed. Everybody was being involved. And nobody knew how to bring an end to the violence. And the elders of each village gathered and they said, "Look, if you guys just apologize, we will accept your apology and then everything will return to normal." "Well, we would apologize if we started it, but we did not start it, so you should apologize." "We would never start such a thing. We are civilized." "Civilized? We see how you run around the village attacking everything. Huh? We saw you attacking our old people. We saw you beating up our children." And the accusations, they flew back and forth, back and forth. Nobody accepted responsibility. And soon the villagers were in danger of destroying themselves. And nobody knew what to do until they saw a little figure shuffling up the road. It was Mzee Chomba, and he said, "I will tell you who is responsible." And he began to point. "You are responsible. And you, and you, and you, and you, and everybody is responsible. Because at every moment leading up to this moment, any one of us could have stopped it. But nobody did. We're all responsible." And the villagers listened and they were ashamed. They knew he was right. And so they decided that they would build a huge fire between the villages. And that night, everybody, from the youngest to the oldest, brought something of value. A piece of jewelry, a toy, an item of clothing. And together they gathered around the fire and they threw their items in. A kind of sacrifice so that peace could return. And when the fire had consumed everything and there was only ash remaining, the villagers went home and peace did return. And so the moral of this story is, no matter what we do in this life, is we should always be very, very careful before we throw any bones out of any windows. Thank you.
That was Mara Menzies with a story called Mzee Chomba. And thinking about that idea of little things influencing bigger things that influence even bigger things reminds me, maybe a little strangely, of piano lessons. When I was 8 years old, my parents signed me up for piano lessons. My great piano teacher, Jay Beck, lived just down the street, and I'd walk over to his house on Wednesday afternoons, and I'd try to learn to play the piano. And Jay Beck was a great piano teacher. He had a bunch of students, and I remember him taking all of us on a field trip to the campus of Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah, to hear music being played on their magnificent bell tower. Working for BYU Radio brings that memory up from time to time. I remember him holding a special recital in a local church building, a recital where we all went with our families, not to play pieces we'd been working on, but to hear a composer play a work he'd written based on the stories of Babar the Elephant. And some of these became foundational musical experiences for me. They set the course of my life in a lot of ways, as I grew up to be a musician myself and a music lover. But the truth is, I wasn't a very good piano student. Though it would only have taken a small part of every day, I hated practicing. I wasn't very consistent at it. And finally, I quit taking piano lessons altogether. I came back to a serious study of music in high school, and music is a big part of my life now. But even now, as I play the piano or the guitar, or as I try to write or read music as a singer, I often find myself struggling with things in a way that make me think, you know, this aspect of making music would be a lot easier for me now if only I'd practiced better when I was taking piano lessons from Jay Beck when I was 8. I'm a pretty good musician, but even now I can see the big holes in my music knowledge that might have been filled long ago with a little thing like practicing a little better. And recently I had a real treat. I got to hear Jay Beck, my old piano teacher, play the piano again. He's much older now. And he played at a gathering of old friends from my hometown. It was so beautiful. The music flowed so effortlessly. It filled the room and everyone in it with such beauty. It just carried us away. And I thought about the little things he must have done over a long life, even when they were difficult, in order to reap the reward of being able to play like that. His attention to those little things gave us, who were listening to him, a pretty big gift. And weirdly, that's where Mara's story took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along? You know, maybe one of the reasons practicing the piano was difficult for me when I was a kid can be summed up in this next story told for us by the great Ohio storyteller Kim Whitecamp. The story is a version of a very old tale, one of Aesop's fables, about a grasshopper and an ant. Here's Kim with Work, Then Play.
Once there was a little ant named Zia, and a grasshopper named Yo Hoppy. Say, Yo Hoppy.
Yo Hoppy.
Well, Zia was a good little ant. She worked very hard. And one day she was out picking blades of grass, reaching down to right where they came out of the ground, gently pulling them off, and then placing them over her back and stacking them up. She was running around, picking blades of grass. And Yo Hoppy was on top of a mushroom, listening to his headphones, his head turned while he watched her, his eyes sleepily opening and closing. Finally, he couldn't take it anymore, and he said, Zia, pulled off his headphones. He said, What are you doing? She said, Oh, I'm collecting blades of grass, and I'm going to take them home, and we're going to sit tonight, and we're going to make baskets. And then tomorrow, we're going to put some food in one or two of them, put them on our back, and go to the park for a picnic, and we'll take one extra one that's empty for the food we're going to take from other people's picnics. She said, Do you want to help me pick blades of grass? Do you want to go and have a picnic with us? And he said, Zia, I'm going to tell you now, that sounds like way too much work for a little bit of fun. She said, Yo Hoppy, you are lazy, lazy, lazy. All you want to do is lay around all day or just play. It is work and then play that gets the job done. He said, Whatever. And she said, It is work and then play, Yo Hoppy, that gets the job done. Well, the next day, the baskets were made, and Zia and her family filled two of them with food and kept one empty and made their way to the park. They found a nice little tree at the edge of the forest right before the park started. There were kids playing and running and kicking balls and people having picnics. Some of her brothers and sisters went and gathered some good crumbs and put them in the basket, and then they laid there and they enjoyed the food and they played games as well. Just as they were finishing up and stacking the baskets up to put on their mama's back to take back home, Yo Hoppy came along. And he said, Hey, are you guys still having your picnic? And Zia said, Yo Hoppy, the day's almost over. We've eaten all of our food and we're done. We're finished playing. Almost everybody's left the park. And Yo Hoppy said, Oh, man. He said, I really thought I could kind of catch you guys and get a little food. And she said, Yo Hoppy, you are lazy, lazy, lazy. All you do is lay around all day or play a little bit. She said, You got your priorities all mixed up, upside down. It is work and then play that gets the job done. It is work and then play, Yo Hoppy, Well, fast forward just a 2-3 months, and things began to change. The sky wasn't as sunny as often. And Yohabi was laying on top of a rock, sprawled out, the warmth of the rock and a dusty sun heating him up and keeping him warm, when he heard a rustling. So he turned and he looked, and there was Zia, running around picking clover leaves, putting them in a little sack that she had off to the side. Finally, he couldn't take it anymore, and he said, "Zia, come here." Zia sighed and went over and said, "Hey, Yohabi." And he said, "Hey, Zia," he said, "you're making me tired just watching you." He said, "What are you doing?" She said, "Well, the ground's starting to get a little cold, and soon it's going to be colder. And so I'm gathering velvety little clover petals, and my mama's going to take the web of a spider and sew all of my brothers and sisters brand new shoes to keep our feet warm." And he said, "That's ridiculous." He said, "I'm up on this rock. It's nice and warm. Come up with me." And she goes, "It may be warm there, and it may not be real cold yet, but it's coming, Yohabi. If you come help me, my mom will make you a pair of shoes. Actually, she'll make a pair of shoes for every pair of legs you've got." And he said, "I don't need those." He said, "I'm warm. I'm comfortable." She said, "Suit yourself, Yohabi, but I'm going to tell you something. You are lazy, lazy, lazy." She said, "Your priorities are all upside down. All you want to do is lay around or just play." She said, "It is work and then play that gets the job done. And Yohabi, one day it's going to catch up with you." Yohabi yawned, laid back out on the rock, and enjoyed the warmth of that day. Well, fast forward just another month or two, and now Yohabi is walking around outside, and his feet begin to get numb on the bottom, and there's a little tingle, and he can feel the cold of the earth coming through all of his feet up into his body until he began to shiver. That's when he saw Zia, and he said, "Zia," he said, "listen, I need to talk to you." And she said, "What?" He watched as she came over, all of her little ant feet surrounded by soft, strong, velvety, warm shoes. And he said, "Listen," he said, "you were right. It's getting cold." Zia looked at him and said, "I knew this was coming." He said, "Listen, does your mom have any more shoes or any more clover petals that she could make me some shoes?" And she said, "No. We picked enough that all of us have all the shoes we need, but we don't have any more." And she said, "Now you've waited too long." She said, "Look around." She said, "Where are the clover petals, Yohabi? They're either shriveled up and hanging loose or gone." And he said, I don't know what I'm going to do." He said, "I'm cold." And she said, "Yohabi, I warned you." She said, "I feel like all I ever do is warn you." She said, "You are lazy, lazy, lazy. Don't you remember I even asked you that day to come pick some extra clovers while I did my work? And then you'd have shoes." She said, "You have got to get your priorities straight. You have them all mixed upside down." She said, "It is work and then play that gets the job done, Yohabi. I'm sorry." And she went home. Fast forward, and winter was starting to settle in. This time, Yohabi had his back up against the back of a tree, and he was eating sticky, dried berries. His mouth was full of a dry, thick juice. His hands were full of red color. And as he sat there, gorging himself on those dried berries, he watched as Zia came out, and he thought, "There she is again." She had a basket set beside her as she ran to and fro, gathering corn. Not only Zia, but her brothers, her sisters, her mother were all gathering dried corn from the field nearby. He watched this for a while, and finally he couldn't take any more, and he said, "Zia, what are all of you doing?" She came over with a nice, bright, yellow, golden piece of corn and said, "Oh, Yohabi, we're gathering corn for the winter because it is getting cold. You're even wearing a sweater and a scarf." And she said, "Soon we won't have any food." And he said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "My belly's so full from all these berries." She said, "Soon those will be gone because the birds are going to eat them and the snow is going to cover them." And he said, "Well, I am full, and so I don't think I need to go around collecting any kind of corn." He said, "These berries are way better and sweeter than corn." And she said, "Yohabi, I'm telling you, you're going to hit a time where you're not going to have any food because you're not putting it away." She said, "Why don't you help us? If you help us fill a basket, we'll hold the corn for you, and when there is none, we'll feed you." And he said, "I'm good. I'm full. I want to take a nap. And she said, oh, yo, Hoppy. She said, I'm telling you, sometimes I don't know what to do with you. You are lazy, lazy, lazy. I feel like it's all I ever say to you. And you don't hear me. It is work and then play that gets the job done. Your priorities are all mixed up. And he said, yeah, just go on. I'm sleepy. And so she did. And go forward about 2 months, and the ground is covered with snow. The branches are bare. The bushes, no more berries even underneath. The chipmunks and the squirrels and the birds had cleaned them all up. Yo Hoppy is walking through the snow, his feet cold and numb, shivering under his sweater and his stomach growling, touching his backbone until he couldn't take it anymore. And he went over to Zia's and he knocked on the door. This time, Zia's mama answered the door. She opened it and she said, oh, yo, Hoppy, you don't look well. And he said, I'm so cold and I'm so hungry. And look at my feet. Zia looked down and his feet weren't even the right color. She grabbed him, brought him inside, helped him took off the scarf, sat him down in front of the warm fire, held him warm, helped him warm all of his feet in front of that fire. And she said, I know you're hungry, aren't you? And he said, yes. And she said, yo, Hoppy, I'm going to tell you the same thing that my little Zia told you. You have got to get your priorities straight. She said, we have offered for you to come and have fun with us and enjoy our food. We have offered to make you shoes. We have offered to store food for you. And now look where you're at. And she said, you know what I'm going to do for you? And he said, what, as he hung his head and waited for it. But what she said was, I'm going to feed you. And I'm going to see if I have something that you can put on your feet. And so he sat there, humbled, as she went and she brought him cornbread, corn pudding, corn chowder, and for dessert, popcorn. When he was done and full and warm, used shoes on his feet, he looked at her and he looked at Zia and he said, I did not deserve this. And she said, Zia's mama, everybody deserves to be warm and have food, but I'm going to tell you right now, you'd better change your priorities. It is work and then play that gets the job done, yo Hoppy. Do you think next year you're going to act differently? And he said, yes, ma'am. And she said, good.
That was Kim Whitecamp with Work, Then Play. Can you remember a time when something small you did influenced something big? Is there a time when you were tempted to do your playing before your working in a way that wound up being trouble? What are some ways in which you try to make room for the things you should do and also the things you want to do? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. You can tag us on social media or send us a message at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, at byu.edu. We want to thank Mara Menzies and Kim Whitecamp for sharing their stories with us today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. Hearing people talk about their own faith traditions can help strengthen your faith. Learn more with Stephen Cap Perry on the BYU Radio podcast, In Good Faith.